you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Super Bowl's days away. We're in New Orleans on Radio Row, and all anyone can talk about is whether or not the Chiefs are going to get a beneficial call in this Super Bowl that could help them complete the three-peat. Welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff, Commissioner Roger Goodell, answering tons of questions yesterday, Pearl, and a few of them about this perception, and there is some data behind it, that the Chiefs have gotten some home cooking, as we say.
There's going to be such scrutiny on the officials in this game because everyone expects a close game. It's a 1.5-point spread. I just can see this coming down to the end, and you have certain calls that are inevitable. You're going to have a lot of passing in the fourth quarter. That means that either going to hit the quarterback or there's going to be potential pass interference, especially in New Orleans. The thing with pass interference, like,
yeah, don't
you
bring
can
it
screw
up.
You can screw that up pretty good. I just think that it's Roger Goodell's laughing it off, but let's face it, it's not even like conspiracy theory. Officiating is going to be a big part of this game if it's really close, which we all expect.
And officiating was a big part of this game 2 years ago in Super Bowl 57, which kind of, you know, for all intents and purposes, came down to a James Bradbury of the Eagles at the time holding call, but James Bradbury kind of helped, if you will, any theories and any controversy, because he said, yes, I did hold.
And also, we physically saw the jersey stretch.
Yes, kind of like getting
pulled. That was a question about degree of pass interference, which is really hard to tell. Like, did it pass the supposed threshold of illegal contact?
Well, and also time and place. See, this is the thing, right? And when I've said this before, so I'm guilty of it as well, to say you can't make that call in that moment. See, then that's not the officials. That's us. That's us saying that there is this sort of unwritten rule book about when you're supposed to call these plays and when you're supposed to let the contact happen. And, like, you're official, you're sunk if you're trying to go by everybody's definition of when and where you should be calling. That one wasn't ticky-tack, but some of the more ticky-tack fouls.
Well, right. Like, you're not going to call pass interference on a Hail Mary, even if there's contact. So there's always a when and where. I think that it's a judgment call. So that's why the NFL is in such a tricky spot here. This is all judgment. What's roughing the passer? Like, does it hit to the top of the shoulder pads? Is that roughing the passer? It's a very hard job.
What's roughing the passer? What's a catch? What's offensive pass interference, defensive pass interference? I've seen, we can all point to 100 different times when it got called one way or another.
And let's not even talk about the fourth down call in the Buffalo game.
Yep.
Why is there an electronic chip in the ball? That's all legitimate, and the NFL says they're going to look into doing that. I mean, look, the tush push.
Yeah.
There was a two-point conversion attempt where the Eagles got a penalty, moved it out to 1 yard. There was a tush push. How on earth did the official see that Jalen Hurts was short of the line with the ball? That's a blind guess.
Totally.
This is a $20 billion industry who's making a blind guess whether this is a over the goal line, because the pile is too confusing. And then when do they blow the whistle? What is stop progress? It's an impossible job. I will admit that.
Well, so is it, though? Because here's the thing. Goodell was asked about this yesterday, about whether the technology of putting like a chip in the ball or something like that could happen. He said, yeah, we look into it. Other leagues do it. We take their data. He said, but the thing is, it's like an odd-shaped ball. So like, where do you put the chip and all that? But like, for EJ, you're a big soccer fan, for VAR, right, which is at the goal line, couldn't you have just VAR, which is basically a laser that goes in the goal line? So it's not actually the chip in the ball, although maybe we could talk about that and that might help, but especially at the goal line.
Right. But how do you know, how does it measure if the guy's knee is down?
Right. That's the trick.
Do you put a laser in the guy's knee and you have some sort of matrix-like electronic system? Eventually, they probably will.
That's how the microchips will begin.
Yeah.
NFL players. And it'll go to all of us.
It just reminded me of Austin Powers, as sharks with laser beams coming out of their heads.
Yeah, like, so
yeah,
that's a problem. Because the knee and the elbow. And what? And also, like, is one butt cheek equal down or two butt cheeks? Like, we're getting...
Well, we all know it's one butt cheek.
Yeah.
that the rule book is clear.
Is it the side of the butt cheek? How much butt cheek are we talking? Anyway, it's very hard to tell. And the tush
push.
Also,
does it give favor to people with big butts?
Well,
like, they don't have a good enough life.
The other thing, too, is I think people are working the officials. I don't know who's starting this. The game is fixed and the officials help the Chiefs. Like, the Eagles have every reason to flare up this storyline, because officials are imperfect. If they are about to make a big call pro Chiefs in the fourth quarter, you don't think they've heard all this noise? You don't think they know Roger Goodell is getting questions in the press conference? I wonder if they're going to hesitate to throw that flag because they want to avoid looking biased toward the Chiefs.
Okay, but if you throw an egregious flag that helps the Eagles, it's the same. You're answering the same question. Now you're biased against the Chiefs. Let's hear a little of Roger Goodell says these Chiefs conspiracy theories are ridiculous.
I think the men and women that officiate in the NFL are outstanding. They have the highest possible standards. That's a ridiculous theory for anyone who might take it seriously. But at the end of the day, you know, it's something we always have to continue to work on. How do we make our officiating better at all times?
I would say simplify the rule book, but that's just me. More from Roger Goodell says the Chiefs' conspiracies remind him of a ad campaign that they leaned into about the script.
Sort of reminds me a little bit of the script, right? That I write a script and I have the script for the entire season. Listen, I think from a lot of those theories are things that happen in social media and they get a new life.
Okay, can we talk about, we're actually talking about two separate things here that I'm not sure if Roger Goodell, maybe because the way he was asked the question, I don't think you are going to find a lot of people who believe that Roger Goodell sits down in a conference room before the season and says, all right, here's where we have to get to. We got to get to Chiefs-Eagles, and let's work backwards on how we're going to get there. Like, this thing is all preordained.
Do you think they meet at a diner and do it? Like, what do you mean in a conference room?
All right, that's one thing. You actually think that the season is one big sham. We're living in a simulation, and they already know the outcome.
Facts.
That's...
No, I'm kidding.
That's
kidding.
One part, okay? That's ridiculous. That's patently
Facts.
Ridiculous. Okay, but then there's another aspect of this, which is just do the Chiefs seem to get more calls that go their way? And to that, we actually have something called facts and data. And if you want to talk about the whole season, well, let's throw that out because let's talk about just playoff games. And let's talk about playoff games during this run that they're on. So this was a graphic that was put on ESPN.
Yeah.
And it is about Chiefs playoff penalties since 2021. Playoff penalties since 2021. The Chiefs have gotten flagged for 36. Opponents have gotten flagged for 66. Mm-hmm. So that means almost 200 more penalty yards for the opponent as the Chiefs. They've been the more penalized team zero times, and they've had more penalty yards one time than their opponent. So that's data.
Like, well, yeah, except
and
that.
I think a lot of it is probably just home field advantage, but again, it is data.
Well, also, too, it's the Chiefs are the better team in almost all these games. So the better team always gets...
Okay.
The inferior team is going to hold more. The inferior team is going to interfere more. I mean, I think dealing with Patrick Mahomes, like, yeah, you're more likely to create a penalty.
See, but here's where I'm not going to say it doesn't add up, but here's where you get the incongruency there, is they actually have players that are some of the most penalized players in the league, including their left tackle, during the regular season.
Right, but the Chiefs mail in the regular season. They're not even running their full playbook.
Okay, so that's your explanation. I'm just saying that if you look at the regular season, they do have guys who get penalized all the time, and yet in the playoffs, all of a sudden, now the opponent's getting penalized all the time. Do you not understand? Like, this is what leads to Roger Goodell getting questions like this.
I hear you, but I have a good friend who's a Chiefs fan, and he said, we've never seen that play about something they ran against Buffalo. Like, you have to understand, the Chiefs put a lot of pressure, especially in playoff football, on the opponent. So there is some reality there, too. Like, they're the better team 90% of these playoff games. So, of course, they're going to get more calls. Now, during the regular season, I think they're experimenting, too. Like, and we know famously, because they're like, what happens if we move our two tackles back 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage? They're going to test the zone. We're going to test the zone. I actually think they're playing with the rules. I know that sounds crazy, but I do think, like, well, let's see what we can get away with. And then we're going to really bring it all together in the playoffs, where officials have a totally different vibe. Like, officials call less flags in the playoffs, right? Isn't that the rule?
Well, I'm not sure, but I think the other part that doesn't help the NFL is they do this thing where, and we're talking about the idea that the Chiefs get more calls, and Roger Goodell was answering questions about it yesterday, because I think there are a significant amount of football fans that sort of feel like the Chiefs get a little boost from the officials, either bias or unconscious bias, you know, because they also get so many home games that they've earned. But the idea that they're running some of these, like, working out the kinks on some of these, like, trick plays or pushing the envelope or what have you. I think they are doing that. And I also think that's what leads to the boogeyman aspect of the Chiefs. EJ, you wanted to say something about this.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the penalty facts are facts, but I do think not all penalties are equal.
That's true.
Because during that 8-game winning streak the Chiefs currently have during the playoffs, I think now it's 9, I guess, when Adam Schefter posted this. Roughing the passers, opponents 6, Chiefs 0.
Right.
Unnecessary roughness, opponents 4, Chiefs 1. And it seems like we've seen those calls where when it involves Patrick Mahomes, involves a bang-bang physical play, I feel like, I mean, I saw one roughing. I can't even remember a time where the Chiefs got called for a roughing or an intentional, a roughing pass or an intentional roughness. It seems like those plays, which seem to be back-breaking plays, 15-yard automatic first-down penalties, those, by the stats, are going to the Chiefs. Now, right. Is a holding, is an offside? Those are, in some ways, those aren't judgment calls. It's either you or offside, or you weren't offside. You false start, or you don't false start. These are more judgment calls, yep. And those seem to be going to the Chiefs.
Yeah, but I mean, maybe the Chiefs are just more poised in these moments where the younger players who haven't been there before are not.
Maybe, but these are. I mean, 6 rough in the passers to 0 in an 8-game stretch. That's a bit. And the Chiefs hit the quarterback. This is not a team that we're gonna. I mean, Steve Spagnuolo. They're not. We're gonna hold back. We're not gonna bring pressure. Like they come after quarterbacks, and that number is striking to me.
It definitely is, and those are the 15-yarders for sure. And I think it's a little bit, though, the way that Mahomes plays, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the way that he plays and the way that he can sort of, you know, bait guys and bait defenders into hitting him at these bad angles and by the sidelines and stuff like that. It's a strategy. Josh Allen uses it, too. Lamar Jackson probably should use it more. I mean, it's definitely a strategy, and Roger Goodell also was asked about face masks. It looks like they are he didn't say outright, but they are definitely looking at replay on some of those face mask calls to try to get them under wraps,
yeah,
because those are backbreakers too, because those are 15 yards.
Yeah, and you can, the thing about face masks is we can all see the face mask when the official might be blocked from it, so it's a very glaring one. See, I'm just curious, and I'm trying to remember, I do remember Josh Allen complaining about something in the Chiefs game. Were there any potential roughings on him? I don't recall like being complaining about that one. So,
well, Josh Allen definitely called out a hold before he passed the ball, which was galaxy brain crazy.
Yeah, which he got. So
yeah, he got that one.
But I don't think they, like, for some reason Josh Allen didn't invite any roughings in that game, as I recall. He got sacked twice. But
I feel like CJ Stroud was getting mauled. I mean,
he got sacked 8 times.
Yeah, I mean, they never roughed him.
Yeah.
Let's go to the phones, 855-212-4227. Good luck out there, CJ.
I hope he's okay.
You're still a roadblock on the way to the Chiefs three-peat. Let's go to our pal Phil, who's in Pennsylvania. Phil, you feeling nervous yet?
I'm starting to get there. You know, it's just the closer you get there, you know, you just kind of get excited, but also a little bit nervous, just afraid that Mahomes is going to do Mahomes thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's going to. I don't know if it means they're going to win, but he's going to do Mahomes things.
Wow, that's true. I've just seen a lot of, you know, even though you may not play them, they still somehow find a way to win. Anyway, the reason I'm calling is I think the Eagles should go all in on Myles Garrett.
They definitely need
an edge rusher.
Yep.
They definitely need an edge rusher. Brandon Graham's probably going to retire, and I think they lose another one.
They lose Josh Sweat's going away, too.
Yep. Give them 2 first-round picks. Eagles' first-round picks are at the end, so they're going to draft one anyway, so might as well get a bona fide, in his prime, defensive player of the year almost every single year, at least a nominee.
Yep.
And seriously, if the Eagles add him, they would have a defensive line that would rival Reggie White and Jerome Brown. It'd be violent.
Yeah.
Phil, thank you for the phone call. What do you think?
I mean,
first-round picks for Myles Garrett,
and
you got to pay him.
I would do it in 2 seconds, but one thing, Howie Roseman, the GM of the Eagles, is on fire drafting. He got Quinyon Mitchell in the 20s, who looks like a perennial all-pro cornerback. And he got Nolan Smith at 30, who I didn't like at first, but now is leading the NFL in postseason sacks. So I don't want to take draft picks away from Howie. That makes me nervous.
Go Bears!
You should want him. 31 other teams basically should want him. And the Eagles might fit if he wants to go to a contender. But I think this is ultimately, so yesterday Myles Garrett put on social media that he's asking for a trade. Browns have said we're not going to trade him. This is just such rock bottom. There's no end in rock bottom for the Browns franchise. Now your best player is asking for a trade because your Deshaun Watson bet blew up so spectacularly, and now you got to start over we all presume, with a rookie quarterback at two. And I get why Myles Garrett probably doesn't want to stick around for that.
Yeah, I mean, listen, he was pretty good this year. I mean, I don't think he was at his peak, but they were 3-14. So, like, I do think at a certain point he's doing the math, and they might do the math, be like, this guy is fantastic, Hall of Famer, surefire, but we need a quarterback. I think that's such an overwhelming problem in Cleveland that this might not even be their front burner topic because they have the high draft pick. I think they need a quarterback. Like, you can't even have this conversation about Myles Garrett, because if you don't have anybody playing that position, you're not going to win anything in the NFL.
No, we know that. But think about it. In a season that was just lost by the Cleveland Browns, right, 3 wins, he still had 14 sacks. He led the league in tackles for loss. And this is probably with your opponent basically running the ball for most of, you know, I don't want to say most of second halves, but for a lot of it. 855-212-4227. I mean, the Jameis Winston experience is always amazing for people who have no skin in the game. I can't imagine what it's like watching him if you are a fan of the team, because
Jameis is awesome, though.
But, like, you never know where the ball's going.
Well, listen, this
not
is
like
not,
in a Will Levis kind of way.
It's not breaking news that the Browns are in trouble as a franchise. They made this all-time investment in Deshaun Watson, and it did not work out. So, of course, you can't cut it any other way. You can't invest $200-something million in Deshaun Watson and then come out of that unscathed. I mean, you make that risk, you're going to have a downside if it doesn't work out, and it did not work out.
Yeah, and the only weird thing about that is mostly everyone saw that coming. Not that he would get hurt
Nobody
in the way
saw
he
that
did.
Coming. Nobody saw that coming. Come on.
I think if you had pulled up a poll at that point, do you think the Browns are more likely going to regret this contract or win a Super Bowl with Deshaun Watson? What do you think the breakdown would have been? We may have done that poll, by the way.
I remember most of NFL Nation being excited for the Browns. Deshaun Watson was a great quarterback.
That's true. Once upon a time. 855-212-4227. Then a lot got in the way. We have a poll out here for you at Maggie and Pearl on X. Do you think the Chiefs benefit from an officiating bias? 73% say yes. That's a problem for the NFL. That is a problem. And on top of it, the fact that nobody really wanted to see the Chiefs again.
I don't know how big a problem these controversies sells. It makes it, you know, like, basically baseball had all these controversies and that sold and got a lot of ratings. I don't think it's a massive problem. The gambling makes it a little tricky, but people are going to tune in for this. It adds to the drama. I mean, NFL, do they really have any problems? Do you see any problems around?
No, it looks pretty robust, actually. What did they get for the AFC Championship game? 58 million people tuned in.
Yeah, people are like, oh, I hate the NFL. It's totally fixed. What time's the game on?
855-212-4227. Let us know if you think the Chiefs do benefit from a bias, and what do you think it is? I think it's just simple home field. They're getting home calls. Maybe there's more theories out there. We've had a few this morning that I think have made some sense. We'll get into those in just a moment. Again, we're live from Radio Row in New Orleans. It's the Maggie and Perloff Show, and we're back in just moments. Maggie and Perloff here on Radio Row in New Orleans. Let's talk to one of our absolute favorites. It's Mike Jones, covers the NFL for The Athletic. And love your last article, Mike, because you really just laid out the biggest storylines heading into this game. To me, though, I think three-peat is like top of the list and everything else is a close second. Right. It was not top of your list, though. How do you think the three-peat is factoring into this game?
Well, I mean, I think it's huge. And look, for me, yes, I am all about seeing things that we've never seen before. And so I think it would be huge. I just know that there's a little bit of fatigue from the national fan base, which is still odd to me. Like, why? Like, I talk to my kids about this and they're like, oh my God, anybody. But I'm like, you're never going to see this again. Like, so why not see this? So that's the only reason why I didn't put it first. But I think it will be huge, because the thing is, it's so hard to bet against Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes and Steve Spagnuolo. They always seem to find a way, and it's going to be challenging, you know, for the Eagles, because again, you never know what Spags is going to pull out. Andy Reid and Mahomes are always on the same page, and if you get the ball in his hands with, you know, 2 minutes left, I think I saw a stat that he's something like 7-0 when needing a game-winning drive, you know, in the postseason. I mean, so
feels like 70-0.
Yeah, you know, so you can't bet against them, and so yeah, if they win this thing, they automatically, I mean, again, nobody has done this in the modern history of the NFL. And, you know, the Patriots were close and fell short. So it would be pretty epic if they can pull this off.
Yeah. Can you remember a team that was this disliked in the Super Bowl? And I'm going to say the word disliked. I was thinking the 90s Cowboys, I don't remember everybody disliking them like this. And I'm an Eagles fan. We certainly didn't like them. Were the Patriots, did they ever reach, do you ever have so many people sort of tired of one team like this?
Yeah, well, this is the thing. People didn't like the Patriots, but there was reason to dislike them.
Yeah.
There was the sign stealing, you know, whole, you know,
Spygate.
Controversy, yeah. Spygate. There was Deflategate. You had Belichick, who was kind of gruff and unlikable, and Brady, who was a robot and, like, you know, too perfect. Andy Reid's a grandpa wearing Hawaiian shirts. And Patrick Mahomes is down to earth and fun. And Travis Kelce, I mean, yeah, he's got a famous girlfriend, but, you know, yeah. he's a. There's nothing really to dislike about this team that's off-putting, except for the fact that they're good. And so it's crazy to me. But again, the Patriots were disliked, but for good reason.
Yeah.
Mike Jones joining us from The Athletic. Got a cool new feature that's going to be happening with The Athletic. It's Connections with yes. Sports. Very happy about this because I love playing Connections. I play it every day. And my husband was very impressed that my score was above 70%. But enough about me. You mentioned watching something we've never done with the Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
If they can pull off this three-peat, do you put them ahead of the Patriots in terms of greatest dynasties? Do you put them ahead against the 70s Steelers and, you know, 80s 49ers and 90s Cowboys?
I want to say yes, but still it's hard to say yes because you don't know, like, are they going to fall off right after this? To dominate for 20 years, to win 6 Super Bowls over that span is the gold standard. Yes, winning 4 in the last, 5 years or something like that, 4 in the last 6 years, and 3 in a row would be unprecedented. But again, until they show that longevity, I think that would be what it would take to make them the greatest. Now, one of the greatest, and maybe right behind the Patriots because they did it in such a short amount of time, yes. But Patrick Mahomes isn't 30 yet.
Yeah.
So we could see this go on and on and on for a while. I think they have a chance. If they do it here, they have a chance to surpass the Patriots for sure.
What do you think of this actual version of the Chiefs? Are they as talented as the other teams in the three-peat or even in the 4 Super Bowl era?
I think so. Now, offensively, we haven't seen that explosiveness that, you know, this past year, but they dealt with a lot of injuries with their wide receivers. But what's impressive about them is they went from being this high octane offense to really reinventing themselves.
Mike Jones joining us from The Athletic just for a few more minutes. Okay, another question just off of this game, but NFL, like the whole thing. What do you think of what Tom Brady is doing in Vegas? Pete Carroll gets hired as the head coach. Chip Kelly, now the offensive coordinator, still don't have a quarterback.
Right.
Do you think this is a recipe for success?
I think that they are really investing in trying to make sure they have the, after, you know, going cheap and you know, kind of skimping here and there, they're like, no, we really need to invest in this thing. I know they wanted Liam Cohen. First, they wanted Ben Johnson.
Right.
That didn't make sense to me because they didn't have a quarterback, so why was that going to be attractive to him? Then they wanted Liam Cohen. And that didn't work out. I think Pete Carroll is the best thing for them because this is a team, a franchise that's been in bad shape. And now you have a veteran head coach who's got a Super Bowl ring, who knows what it's supposed to look like. And he's going to come in and turn this thing around. You've got quality assistants. Again, like you said, they need a quarterback. But I think that Tom Brady is really putting the pressure on Al Davis. Stop doing this on the cheap. Let's do this the right way. And we're going to see those investments again. It's going to take a while. Can they find a quarterback? Because there's not a great free agent option, doesn't look like. I don't know if they're going to be able to get a difference maker franchise guy in this year's draft. You know, we will see. But they're starting to put that foundation in place there. And so I think things will start to turn around. Again, they're in a tough division too.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But they're building this thing like an NFL organization should be built.
All right, if we're doing non-Super Bowl topics, we have to ask you the question of last week. Cam Newton said that he would be happy winning an MVP without a Super Bowl. I don't know if you heard
this. He wouldn't trade in his MVP for a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And well, I know you probably have covered Cam. What do you make of that quote?
I mean, that's what he's saying now. I mean, you know, obviously, as he's looking back, he's come to grips with the fact that he wasn't able to win a Super Bowl. But he's like, well, that doesn't define me, though, because I still had a quality career. I still did a lot of things that nobody else had done, so I'm going to be happy with that. I am not going to give the critics what they want and say, you know, oh, I wish I'd had this. So he's a proud guy. I think he does believe in himself. I think he's at peace with what he did. Now, you know, them losing in that Super Bowl, he would have loved to have gotten that thing right there. So I don't know if I totally believe him, but I give him credit for being strong and making that argument.
And Eli Manning connected two Super Bowl rings. That's really his claim to fame.
Right.
No-brainer Hall of Famer to you?
I think so. I mean, because look at the teams that he beat for his Super Bowl, you know? And I know some people say all his body of work and they didn't have a whole lot of winning seasons and things like that. But he was a warrior. He was clutch when he needed to. Again, you beat Tom Brady twice, for your two Super Bowls. Not a whole lot of guys have multiple Super Bowl rings. I say he's a Hall of Famer.
Mike Jones from The Athletic. Mike, thanks so much again. Sports Connections is going to be starting. This was music to my ears. I can't wait for this.
Yeah, we needed one more game, to slow the start of our mornings, but I can do much better with Sports Connections than the regular connections.
Wait, so. Are you going to be... You're not writing these connections.
No, I'm not doing
it. Okay.
No.
I was going to say.
Our team is, but no. I stink at the other connections game, and I'm actually really good at this one. So.
Wait, Perloff, do you play connections?
No.
Oh, what are you doing?
Gotta get you aboard.
Go to Sports Connections then.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to start with sports. I really like what I'm hearing.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be awesome. Mike, thank you so much. I know the Bogish Place connections because we've talked about it in the past. I don't know if the audience, is this a ubiquitous thing? Perloff doesn't play. It's like a New York Times game on their app. And so now that The Athletic is owned by the Times, we get a Sports Connections. Bogish, what's your percentage score?
Well, I had not played either that or Wordle in a while. So I'm off the wagon, so to speak. But
What are you, busy with other things? What do you have, a job, kids, a life, a wife?
Yes. Yes.
Boo.
I know. I know fart-filled planes to sit on and have time to play games. So.
Well, consider yourself lucky because not all of us, can avoid such stink. What's going on in the world today?
Well, on the heels of Luka and De'Aaron Fox and maybe Jimmy Butler soon, the NFL dipping its toes into the mega trade waters. We've got Myles Garrett requesting a trade out of Cleveland and Cooper Kupp telling us that the Rams told him he'll be moved soon. Kupp does not want to leave. The team is working with him on a good destination. Trading him will save LA roughly $20 million in cap space. Now, ahead of Thursday's NBA trade deadline, the Suns may be listening to offers for Kevin Durant. The Warriors are hunting for a huge name to help Steph Curry. Golden State linked to Butler, but the latest reports there say Butler has told the Dubs he would not sign long-term with them. On the court last night, the Bucks went to OKC without Giannis, Dame, Brooke Lopez, and Chris Middleton.
5 seconds left, Shea across the timeline. Closed by Jackson, 7 feet, Shea will open. Right side angle three is up and in at the buzzer. Cha-Chinga Thunder money ball, punctuating an outstanding Thunder first half. OKC 78, Milwaukee 44 at the break.
So OKC up on the fake Bucks by 34 at halftime. They won 125-96. That highlight from Matt Pinto on Thunder Radio.
That's a great product, NBA. Thanks again.
I wonder how they're losing to the NFL. It's Super Bowl week. You have a game between two marquee good franchises who are definitely contenders this year, and one team doesn't bring their starting five.
Yeah, although I think, now in theory, this is what the NBA wants, right? Didn't they tell teams if you're going to rest guys to rest them all in one, not spread it out over multiple games? It just don't be this game against the Thunder.
I thought that it was supposed to be home games that you're supposed to rest guys.
That
because
too.
In theory, the home fans have 41 chances to see you, whereas if you're a Bucks fan living in Oklahoma City, hats off to you.
Right.
But you only get one chance.
But I thought it was also national TV games. Was this a national TV game?
I don't think so.
No, okay. Not if Matt Pinto was. I mean, I'm just saying he's their local guy.
Yeah, it's Monday, so no. They don't have national.
Yeah, I would think Bucks Thunder would raise to the level of national game, but I think there are guidelines around national TV games.
And the Knicks were on NBA TV, so it definitely wasn't. It wasn't the Bucks.
Okay.
The Warriors, by the way, fought off the Magic 104-99. The Kings 116-114 winners in Minnesota. DeMar DeRozan scored 33. The Wizards are hot. Two straight wins after that 16-game skid. A 124-114 victory in Charlotte last night. And Trae Young, always hot.
Now Trae Young. 4 seconds on the 24. Trae dances. Trae spins. Trae turns. He fires a floater. It's good. A three-pointer by Trae Young. And the Hawks lead 133-130. Trey Young with a three.
Our friend Steve Holman on Hawks Radio. Trey scoring half of his 34 in the fourth, including that winning three with 1.6 seconds left for a 132-130 win in Detroit.
I love his call. Like last time where it's like, Trey stole the ball. Oh, my God, he won the game. Trey just won. Like, the way he calls it, it's like, I don't know. It's like a race. Almost like horse racing or something. I don't know how to describe it.
Oh, he won it by a nose?
Yeah, exactly.
Auburn and Duke remain atop the AP Men's Top 25 this week, but a lot changed after them because 15 ranked teams lost last week, three of them losing twice. Alabama, Tennessee, Houston complete the new top five. Number 12, St. John's, has its highest rank since the end of the 99-2000 campaign. On the court last night, number 16, Kansas, took care of 8th-ranked Iowa State, 69-52. Hunter Dickinson, 14 points, 9 rebounds, and 4 blocks in front of his grandkids. And Minnesota Wild Center...
Ruff almost spit his coffee on his laptop because Hunter Dickinson's 80 years old and still playing basketball at Kansas.
Give a guy a warning, Bogus.
At Minnesota Wild Center, Ryan Hartman suspended 10 games for driving an opponent's head into the ice over the weekend. Hartman, a repeat offender, which increases his punishment. He says this one, though, was a total accident. He just lost his balance fighting for a loose puck with this gentleman. Guys, back to you.
You suck, Bogus.
Yeah, likely story. Okay, lots more to do here from Radio Row in New Orleans. It is Maggie and Perloff. Coming up a little bit later in the show, we're going to talk to someone who is interviewing for one of the high-profile openings in the NFL this cycle and a whole lot more. Stay tuned, M&P. Well, this portion of the show is brought to you by Ethos Life, the easy way to get life insurance in 10 minutes. Up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam, just a few health questions. Get your free quote at checkethos.com. Not available in all states. Welcome back to Radio Row in New Orleans. Our coverage of Super Bowl 59 continues on this Tuesday. But Perloff, it's always time to talk about the Dallas Cowboys. Yeah. That music is our Cowboys quickie. And this one comes to us from the Micah Parsons podcast. He was talking with Derwin James, of course, of the L.A. Chargers. And he told Derwin James that he was recruited to Alabama, but not to play linebacker. Let's hear it.
Bama offered me. What they offered? To play running back.
No way.
Yeah.
You ain't got no finesse, though, bro. I can't see you as a running back. No offense, bro. Like, you all, like... football. When they say basketball players that play basketball like football players, they describing you, honestly, bro.
No offense. A great use of no offense. Derwin James.
Yeah,
there's more here. He says Micah Parsons lacks the wiggle to play running back.
I'm just saying, like, a running back to me, you got to be able to, like...
Nah.
I feel like they're going to take you out on third down.
What?
You're a first down, second down running back.
You couldn't cover me.
Bro, you got no wiggle, bro.
And then there's more. Parsons tells Derwin James that he's, you know, built like another solid running back in the league, one of the all-time greats.
Hold up. Have you seen my high school tape, cut?
I seen it. You just running everybody over and just fast, too. But I got to give you that. You fast, and so some people can't catch you. But I ain't see no wiggle.
So what Derrick Henry?
He's just fast and big.
So what is Micah Parsons?
Fast and big. Nah, bro.
It's a great podcast. I have no idea if the Cowboys are ever going to even get to the NFC Championship game, but man, is the pod funny. So that was Micah Parsons and Derwin James. Perloff, Micah Parsons as a running back at Alabama.
Get me. Well, first of all, he is the same size as Derrick Henry. He's small for a defensive player. I got to find Micah Parsons 40. That is the key here. And I love that analogy. Everyone knows that a basketball player who plays like a football player, if you ever go up against a college football player, they run in a straight line where basketball players move both vertically and horizontally.
Mm-hmm.
Football players move in one direction, and I totally get that. I think he nailed it. I love Micah Parsons. I would play him at both now. I think he should be a two-way player.
That is your Cowboy quickie. Manny, you got the 40 time?
4.36 40 for Micah Parsons.
Smoking. Could he have played linebacker? You know, here's what's funny. And I don't know if Brian Schottenheimer, the new head coach of the Dallas Cowboys, who is going to be calling plays, would do this. But do you line up a trick play for Micah Parsons? Do you give him something at the goal line? You know, can he handle like a handoff. Listen, your run game last year was kind of pathetic for the Dallas Cowboys.
Dowdle came on.
Okay, fine.
Rico Dowdle was fine.
Them not being able to run the ball has been a major issue, and that's why you think they're going to draft Ashton Jeanty in the first round. Now we're talking about the Cowboys, of course. Would they have a package for Micah Parsons?
I like it now. I mean, is this a serious question? I mean, Micah Parsons might be good, but I assume, is he going to be as good as, say, Rico Dowdle? Now, Rico Dowdle, like, you're giving a rep away from a trained running back.
Well, my issue is Micah Parsons, unfortunately, has had some health issues. So I don't know if I want him taking extra really, you know, he would be doling out the punishment in this scenario, like a Derrick Henry type, but you don't want him to get hurt.
Also, too, if you're a running back, you practice every day, you're used to handling the ball. I assume Micah Parsons would fumble at one point because he doesn't practice a running back, unless you're going to take real time having him practice a running back. But there's no way they'll do that.
I know. See, this is the problem, to go away from Micah Parsons for a second and to bring it to the current Super Bowl matchup with the Eagles and the Chiefs.
Right.
You know, when Jalen Hurts hurt his knee, it was really crazy to me that they don't have anyone else to execute the tush push. And I understand that Hurts is great at it because he's got that strong lower body, because he's, you know, able to get low to the ground. He's not that tall. I'm like, you couldn't have Saquon Barkley. You don't think that he could handle the snap? The guy's handling the football. It's not like Michael Parsons where you're taking a defensive player and putting them on offense. But Saquon Barkley has the ball in his hands all the time. That's also his job. He couldn't take a snap under center. I don't believe it.
Yeah, but also you don't really want to expose Saquon anymore. Why go with Saquon? Because of his thighs, you're saying?
I'm saying Jalen Hurts was hurt and they couldn't do the tush push.
Also, one thing about...
You want to expose your quarterback?
Quarterback sneaks is you want length. That's why the Ravens go with Mark Andrews. He just falls forward. Like the great, and Tom Brady was amazing quarterback sneaks because he's tall. Saquon's short.
Yeah, but this is not a quarterback sneak. This is a tush push. They are very, you know, you're a Philadelphia fan. They are very different.
They're not that different. It's basically a quarterback sneak, which also always works. Quarterback sneaks work at an incredibly high percentage. Every fan knows, like, why did you just sneak the ball? It always works, except for Josh Allen.
Except for Josh Allen, who stands up.
Yeah, I don't know what he's doing. Generally, Josh Allen's 6'5". He should just fall forward.
He's too big.
Jared Goff's also pretty bad at it, too.
Well, and teams can't execute the tush push in the way that the Eagles do. But I just think that Hurts, if he, let's say he re-injures his knee in the game, and he's not coming out, but the tush push, Pearl, is such a big part of the Eagles' identity offensively. Yeah. Why not just have the backup plan of Saquon Barkley being able to get on?
Why not do Dallas? I would do Dallas Goddard because he's gigantic.
Well, see, that doesn't work in the tush push,
but
though.
Mark,
that's the fallacy of the
tush push. They
tush push
Mark Andrews.
Yeah, they do, but I think his is more QB sneak. You need the low man. That's the rugby part of it.
Anyway, Jalen Hurts is not hurt, so I don't think this is a moot point.
No, clearly not.
I think it takes a lot of practice to do the tush push. What I'm really worried about is the officials coming after the tush push. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, we're getting a lot of false starts on tush pushes. They didn't give him the measurement. They don't like it. I mean, nobody likes it. Nobody outside of Philadelphia likes the tush push. Well, that's one thing America can agree on. I know they're tired of the Chiefs. They hate the tush push.
Yeah, I would just say just blast it into the sun. I'm not into it anymore.
Well, I mean, how about Micah Parsons when he's on the Philadelphia Eagles in a couple years?
Yeah, will he do the tush push? Well, this is the problem. If you don't want Saquon Barkley doing it or Dallas Goedert or someone actually handles a football, why are you going to give it to Parsons? I'd love to see him get a couple carries at the goal line, but...
But
this is off of Micah Parsons saying he was recruited to Alabama to play running back.
The thing with two-way players, the greatest, probably, I would argue, the most exciting person in NFL history with the ball in their hand was Devin Hester.
Mm.
He was meh as a wide receiver. So it just didn't work. Like, Deion Sanders, when he lined up at wide receiver, was not the same. He was incredible as a punt returner, and when he got an interception, watch out. But they tried him at wide receiver, I believe, and it's just you need too much practice time. That's what I worry about Travis Hunter. Like, is he going to be good at both or elite at both? Or would he be elite at one? It's hard to be a two-way player. It really hasn't. It's not like Shohei, who is ridiculously elite at both.
Sure.
It's rare. I mean, we're laughing about Micah Parsons, but that can't be a real strategy.
Well, now if you want to take it to the Derrick Henry part of it and the draft coming up, I mean, he does seem to fit the moniker of generational talent. But I think if you are a team that's drafting him, you have to have a clear vision and plan for what he's going to do. And I think that plan is playing corner.
Oh, Travis Hunter. Yeah.
Travis Hunter. Why did I say Travis Henry?
I think you said Derrick Henry.
Travis Hunter.
Okay.
We're talking about the draft.
Travis Hunter.
Apologies for whatever I said. I'm in a gumbo haze.
Yeah.
But I think
you got when Travis Henry did Derrick. Well, maybe you said Travis Henry.
Maybe.
Former Bills running back. Really good. So wait, what would you, I'm sorry, say again. What would you do?
Like, you have to have this clear plan for him, right? And I think that the plan has to be for him to play corner, and whatever else you get out of it is really bonus. Do you think you're really drafting him to be like, all right, he's getting he can't play that many snaps in the NFL. He's going to get hurt.
But do they have a lot of evidence that he is a shutdown elite corner? Because he was in the Big 12. They kind of had mediocre competition throughout his stay at Colorado. I don't know that.
But you can say that like about either side of the ball. Like,
feels like a yeah, but we can see
if you get him as a running back, you're going to be like, well, he wasn't playing against elite corners. Like, you could make that
see
argument.
A, yeah, but you could see him more wide receiver. I think you could see the talent. Quarterback, the best cornerbacks don't do anything because no one throws to them. I don't know. I think you have to use him a lot both ways. He is unique, too.
He is. I at the speed of the NFL and everything else, I would just be worried that all of a sudden he would get hurt. 855-212-4227. It is Maggie and Perloff. We're here on Radio Row in New Orleans. So we started this with Micah Parsons saying that he was recruited to Alabama to play running back. Mm-hmm. Alabama was kind of a theme yesterday when we were at the alligator farm.
Yeah.
And not because of a good reason. This is obviously deep into LSU country, and so they had a cute thing in one of the alligator pens of a skeleton that was there wearing an Alabama shirt. And so, right. Very, very funny, very cute. But we actually did get to hold a 5.5-foot alligator yesterday, and that was just one of the many animals that we got to touch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, I feel like I now know Maggie's 40 time, because the speed she had to get out of that pen where the alligator was.
Quicker than Micah Parsons?
Yeah, quicker than Micah Parsons. Mm-hmm. Put her next to, Xavier Worthy.
Yeah. Like, dusted all those fools.
She was out of there. Yeah. In flats, by the way, for those wondering.
No, it was no high heels at the alligator farm. I'm not that silly, but there's something about, so we got to get into this pen with an alligator named Minnie, and she was 5.5 feet, and they kept insisting that she was not going to eat us.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because apparently alligators don't really eat in the winter.
No, I don't think. I think all year round, Minnie was safe. She's been. Some of these alligators have grown up around humans, and they've trained them. And also, I don't think alligators are naturally aggressive towards humans most of the time.
Well, that was not something I was going to test yesterday.
Yeah, when you're holding them, and you were afraid they were going to sense your nerves.
Yes, I was very worried that all the animals that we ended up holding yesterday were going to end up feeling my fear, and that was going to make them react. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was giving out bad vibes. I completely admit that when it came to the animals.
Can I tell you that this tour got off to one of the slowest starts? Because will you admit we were totally confused when we got there?
Yeah.
Because you had been talking to a woman, right?
I was emailing.
Emailing. But the guy who was there.
Mr. Richard.
Mr. Richard, I'm not sure he knew exactly what we were doing there.
I think they were pretty light on the details of what we were there to do. But Mr. Richard was not only there, he was on time. We were late by about 10 minutes.
Oh, he was there for us?
He was there for us, yeah.
He never made that clear. He was like, and also, too, there was a part of the tour. The first part of the tour, I was really nervous because we're in this little entryway, this little
gift
store.
Shop, basically.
And he spent 5 minutes. Okay, you know, see this picture here? This here is Tommy Kleber.
T-Mike.
T-Mike. This here is Tommy Blair's second grandchild.
And then, the family tree.
He treated them like it was George Washington.
But meanwhile, we were surrounded by animals in there.
Yeah, we were surrounded. But we did about 5 minutes on the Kleber family photo. And he's like, you may not know that. That's Billy Kleber.
Well, they were
he's
on
a
seasons,
third cousin.
They were on seasons 1 of 2 of Swamp People. They are celebrities. But here was here's when I knew it was going to be a great day. And it was a great day.
Yeah.
Is when we showed up to Kleber and Sons Gator Tours. Fantastic. Check it out. Fun for the whole family. High recommend. 5 stars. And Mr. Richard was sitting outside waiting for us. They're closed on Mondays, but he opened up the shop for us. And he was missing 4 fingers.
Yeah.
And I was like, this guy knows alligator.
Yeah.
This guy, you can't fake that.
Yeah.
He only has 6 fingers. Like, he knows these animals, and the fact that he's still here means he loves these animals, and he's going to give us a great tour, and he did.
Yeah. This here is Bobby Kleber. You might know him. He's a second cousin, twice removed.
By the way, we got the grandkids. We got everybody.
There's also a gigantic Super Bowl promo. Apparently, Cletus was there.
Yeah,
the Fox
NFL.
Robot. Like, literally, some robot was there eating crawfish at the farm a week ago.
It was memorable. We're going to have all of it on our social media. Don't move. We're back in a minute.